This is episode 125 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host, and the guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. I first met my guest at CAX, the Southern California version of Kadabra. We met in the lobby of a hotel that was contracted for the convention. My guest was there with his wife and kids. Along with a bunch of other entertainers, we were waiting for the bus to take us to a tour of Steve Axtell's workshop and studio. Little did I know that I was sharing the lobby with a person that would influence my career, along with the careers of many other family entertainers. Hang tight and listen to this interview. You'll understand exactly why. Enjoy! Oh! And at the end of the show, make sure to rate and review this podcast. Just hit that little 5-star rating, and if you have a minute, leave a little review. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
He's one of the top family entertainers in the world. His Mario show online is a huge hit, and his DIY magic is spectacular. He's the New York-based touring performer with an all-ages theater show full of homespun magic, DIY robotics, and punk rock slapstick. Variety artist, it's Mario the Maker Magician, Mario Marchese.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
How's it going, Mario?
I'm good, man. I'm cooped up in my attic. How's it going?
It's going good. My first question for you is actually a question that a lot of people have. In fact, Katia Lopez wrote this on my Facebook. She says, and I want to know this too, when and how did the brand Mario the Maker Magician come about?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, this is my 15th year, like trying to find the Mario brand. Basically, it's just a culmination of all my passions over the years and trying to fuse them all into my 45, 50 minute show. Just whatever I'm passionate about, you know, like I love the old 50s hot rod culture, Rat Fink, Ed Roth. I love skateboarding. I love pop punk music from the mid 90s. And I love making things. I reached a turning point in my career where I was like, I gotta be excited when I'm on stage, and I gotta put the things that I'm excited about with me.
Yeah, when I first started this, I said to myself, you know, I'm gonna brand myself as the animal magician. That's one of the things that I do. That's how I started. I said to myself, okay, same as you. I've gotta be excited. I've gotta be like a cross between Steve Irwin, the wild and crazy guy, Steve Martin.
Yeah.
Oh, and Howie Mandel of all people. So I tried to combine all of those and get this crazy energy with this animal magic show. Did you do this organically, or did you actually sit down and think, these are the things that I have to do?
Yeah, no, this is great. And I love the visuals that you just gave me of your inspirations that, you know, I totally picture all of them. Yeah, I mean, honestly, in my early 20s, like I loved the movie Benny and June. It changed my life with Johnny Depp. It's about a street performer. And I love the whole story of that movie because Johnny Depp in the show, he's obsessed with, you know, like Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton. And he's killing it on the street corner, you know, performing. And then they try to like box him in and bring him into like a bar or a restaurant and do this theater show where it's a paid gig. And he completely bombs, you know? There's a freedom to like finding yourself and being where you want to be, where you succeed most at, you know? So for me, in the beginning, you know, I loved Charlie Chaplin so much, I tried to hand sew my own outfit that was exactly like Charlie Chaplin's because I just wanted identity so bad. And you know, Steve Axtell talks about this too. When he was so obsessed with making puppets, he was copying Jim Henson, you know, because he loved it so much. And what he realized is like, he's, you know, got to come up with his own style, you know, and that's what he did. I mean, he exploded. I mean, he's world famous, you know, now. But there is something to say about that. About, you know, there's a reason why we have heroes, and there's a reason why we want to copy them, because it works, you know. And that's just like when you write a great song, when you hear a great song, there's a reason why the chorus and the verse sound so good together. There's a science to it. So basically, after that Charlie Chaplin experience, I just realized it's more the spirit, the comedy that I love, that idea of making someone laugh with an ordinary object became a huge obsession to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once I get into magic, when I saw Charlie Fry the first time, man, it blew my mind. Bill Irwin, Mr. Noodle on Sesame Street.
Yeah, for people that don't know who these people are, Charlie Chaplin, of course, a legend. Charlie Fry, one of the greatest jugglers, thing manipulators, I don't even know how to explain him. Yeah. It's just crazy. And then who was the last one you mentioned? Oh, Bill Irwin. Bill Irwin, possibly the one of the best clowns in the world.
Oh, amen. And Bill Irwin, he did a 2-minute segment on the Cosby Show. It's on YouTube. If you check it out, if you YouTube Bill Irwin, you know, Cosby Show or something, you'll see it. It's just 2 minutes. And these kids, there's only 3 kids in the audience, and you know they're laughing genuinely at what Bill Irwin's done. His timing with comedy and slapstick is so genius. And that kind of stuff fueled my passion. And when I got into magic, the Great Ballantine, you know, like watching his act online, like blew my mind. The idea of like never succeeding at a magic trick for 8 minutes, you know, I mean, I could go on. These kind of guys, that's what I live for, you know, that kind of stuff. And just trying to find my own voice over the years. You know, how do I make that stuff my own?
So you kind of grew into it then?
I got into magic. I joined a magic club and everyone is performing for adults. You know, that's the thing. It's like Copperfield, that kind of like Lance Burton, you know, these greats that have these ginormous shows. So like in my brain, when I was at first with a magic club, children's magic is overlooked. It's undervalued. It's more of a stepping stone to magicians than actually making a career, you know? So I had that mentality early on just because that's what I was fed. Long story short, John, was when I started doing my first gigs, you know, I bombed because I was doing all adult audiences and no one cared. Like I just couldn't do it. And then I started doing kid shows, birthday parties, and the kids are dying laughing. And I was in denial for 2 years. You know? I just had this idea in my head that was so rigid of what I thought I wanted, but it wasn't what I was created to do.
Yeah, I guess I kind of fell into it because I was working for a corporate magician for years.
Yeah.
I did the opposite of him, not to compete. So I started doing children's magic because he does mainly adult magic.
Yeah.
So I kind of fell into it, luckily.
That's so funny.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Yeah, like and it's amazing how everyone has such a unique story with this stuff because you get into magic for children and family, not because you want to be a millionaire and make money. You get into it because like there's a true thing that you have a story to tell. And for some reason, kids connect with it most. Another big thing, John, was, you know, I grew up, my dad was an immigrant, you know, he came from Italy in the 70s. He left his whole family to be here in America. And growing up with, you know, him, you know, he was a stonemason. Watching how hard he worked every day paid a toll on me because like I realized like he gave up everything for his kids, you know. So in my early 20s, my big dream was to just do what I love, like do what I love to pay my rent.
Yeah.
That was a big driving force when I first started doing birthday parties in New York City was like all these magicians didn't want to do kids parties, you know? Like so I started taking them, but I started paying my rent. That was my motivation first. Was like, wow, I'm actually paying half of my rent right now just doing kids parties. And from there I realized, wow, I'm happy. Like I'm really happy right now, you know? Why am I happy? And I'm realizing I'm laughing more and I'm making kids laugh. And it was this thing that like that just organically formed after 2 years where my purpose became, you know, more geared towards instead of thinking about what I want, the audience creates the performer, you know, like listening to where the audience, where my part is from the audience.
The first weekend I ever did birthday parties, I was paid in like 20s and ones and fives. And I had this big wad of dollar bills. The first time I ever made any money, I spread them all on my bed and I rolled around in it like I was rich. And I'm like, this is fun.
I love it, dude. I know that feeling, you know? I know that feeling so well. Like the first dollar I ever made, it was a retired firefighter in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He saw me hanging out at the magic shop so much. He's like, listen, you want to come with me to this Chinese restaurant? I work on Fridays. And I got my first dollar bill doing a SpongeBob routine for a family. And I still have it framed by my computer. I look at it all the time, you know?
Nice.
And I knew at the time that that dollar was important. I didn't know why. I was only 22 when I got into magic. But there was something bigger in the moment where I was like, this is important. This is the first time I made a dollar with something that I felt so excited about. So I know that feeling of rolling in the bed.
Rolling around. Well, let's talk about your robots. I saw you at CAX, and one of the amazing things, Mr. Lamp and Marcello are terrific. So tell me who they are and how they came about. Tell me about those guys.
You know, I always made stuff, you know, in my late teens and early 20s. I just love making stuff, woodworking, puppetry, all that stuff. Make Magazine is a magazine that has been around for a long time. And I picked up a copy in 2005. It had a person playing a cigar box guitar. And I won't forget it. I picked it up and I looked at it and I was like, wow, they're teaching you how to make your own cigar box guitar. Like, I think I can do this. From there, one of the advertisements was this thing called the Arduino. It's a little blue, it looks like the size of a bicycle playing card. You plug it into your computer and you can plug motors to it and you can program these motors to move however you want. Mm-hmm. And man, that was one of those aha moments I'll never forget. You get a couple of them in your life. That was one of them where my brain just exploded because I love automatons and Robert Houdin and I love all that mechanical stuff. And I started making abstract drawing machines and trying to get into art galleries, making no money. Huh. I'm doing my kids' parties on the weekends. And one day Katie's like, what's wrong with you? It's like you live two lives. You have these robots at home and then you're doing, you know, your magic show. So I had a shift and I just started adapting it. The knowledge I was learning from servo motors and robotics. And I, you know, my big thing, John, with magic for me is I love the principle of walking away from the table and something happening. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I love that principle. Like, so Marcel, you know, knocks a ball off the table while I walk away. And that's a very powerful moment for kids too, where like something's happening when you're not paying attention. And so I kind of rolled with it. And Marcel and Mr. Lamp are little theatrical pieces. Marcel's a little robot monkey. It's an homage to old street performing with the crank organ, you know? And
yeah.
The whole thing that Marcel does is he just has to put a ball inside a little can. And it's just me reprogramming this monkey and seeing where the kids laugh and where they don't laugh and adjusting the wait periods. And then I have this little 2.5 minute thing of theater where Marcel doesn't listen, answers yes, no questions. It's a really fun piece for me. My big goal is to make kids laugh using robotics.
And that's so neat when they're doing things and you're not even there. Because you're not even, it doesn't even look like you're doing anything.
Yeah.
Although you are doing a lot of work, but it appears that they're doing the work.
Yeah, it's digital karaoke. Like I memorize the movements of the motors and I have it all choreographed. Just like when you're singing karaoke, you know what words are coming up next.
Yeah.
So I know which bits are coming up and it's all in a loop of code. It's all the same loop every show. Based on the kids' reactions, I'll change my reactions rather than, you know, I can't change Marcel's reactions, you know, in real time. So,
right.
And it's been a fun dance that I do, you know.
So you're doing all these things and then COVID-19 hits. And All of a sudden, none of us are doing live shows. But you pivot. Am I wrong here? Did the Mario show come about after COVID-19 or was it before?
No, it came after. But yeah, I mean, it was devastating, man. You know, I'm not going to lie. I'll be straight up. Like those first 3 weeks after March 10th were probably one of the hardest weeks of my life.
Oh, you and me both.
Because you work for 15 years to be good enough to stand on a theater stage, you know, and finally getting these bookings. And we were on a 3.5 month tour. It was the longest tour we ever did. I bought an Airstream, you know, I bought an Airstream Sport, you know, like this was like Katie was already planning the next year's tour. Like we're trying to figure out how we can homeschool and stay on the road as long as possible. And then you come home and March 10th and I would, you know, like just like you, John, and everyone else, you know, within 3 days, you get like 3-4 months of work canceled on you.
Oh, yeah.
But the good news is within that week, I had to make a choice. I was down, but within those like first, you know, week, I got my guitar and I was like, I'm not going to do magic tricks. I'm going on Facebook Live. I haven't played guitar in 12 years. You know, I pick up my guitar and I go live. I have the parents. I tell the parents, kids watch, kids comment funny words, have your parents comment a silly word, comment something that you love about life. And I just started doing an improv pop punk rock acoustic jam dance party. What was cool was at the time I didn't know who was watching. We only had like 30 or 40 people, but from that one Facebook Live, Make Magazine contacted us and another brand called Camp, and they put us on live. And so I did this thing for a long time. It just ended in August for Make Magazine. Every Friday night we were like brand ambassadors for them. We went on live and we called it the Mario Show. It organically, you know, grew. And And now we have a bunch of really funny clips, you know, it's on the MarioShow.tv. You can see a bunch of them.
Yeah, it is terrific. It's lots of fun. I've tuned in a couple of times. Well, you've seen my name on there a couple of times, huh?
Yeah.
I love it. And one of the neat things about that is, or I think one of the best things is when you're interviewing kids.
Yes.
Because they're so fun. You know, when you see a little kid saying something funny, it's gold.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like, I always wanted to do video work. I always wanted to do this kind of stuff. Never had the opportunity because our business is so wrapped around live performance. You never have time because we're either booking stuff or we're trying to. And but that was so cool. Like, so I go live half an hour, you know, Facebook Live on Make Magazine's page. They're paying us. We're signed contract. We're doing a residency. And we realized very early on, no one wants to sit through a live thing on, you know, on Facebook for half an hour. I mean, if it's just me and the screen, it gets boring. So we realized early on between that and internet connections that can come faulty within those 30 minutes, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. So we started pre-recording. I was like, you know what? My robots are not working on screen. Katie's like, you know what? Let's just get kids on the screen and you just ask them some questions. And I was like, all right. And we did it, and Katie edited them. We would go on for half an hour with each family, and we'd edit it down to 4 minutes for each family. We got the best parts from that. And next thing you know, we're organically bumping into like things like Art Linkletter. You know, kids say the darndest things. These things that happened in the 60s and 70s, that was a working thing. Like I was saying earlier, there's certain things that work, you know, and that's why we emulate them. And so we naturally bumped into that, and we started calling it What If Kids Rule the World? It's insane. It's the one clip that caused traction on our page that helped us get virtual work that we actually could make money, you know, during those hard months, you know? So like now we have them all, you know, together on a page. And if you check our Facebook page, facebook.com/MarioTheMagician, you can see some of them. So now, like I said, John, it's the same thing as early on. You got to listen to the audience. And so the audience seems to be saying, we like these interviews, so we're trying to make more of them, you know?
Yeah, that mixed in with all the other stuff that you do, it is. It's pure gold.
Well, thanks so much.
You know, I have all these questions for you, but you've already answered half of the questions that I'm going to ask.
I can elaborate, trust me. I can talk. You have to interrupt me because I go on.
Well, you know, you do a whole series of teaching kids magic online. I've seen them on YouTube, and I imagine they're on your website somewhere. I don't know. What started that?
Yeah. So because we had this contract where we had to kill 25 minutes, you know, we tried to figure out, we learned early on that like 3-4 minutes of one segment is long enough for kids. You know, if you go over that, sometimes it gets too much. So we started changing it up. So we had What If Kids Rule the World was first. So we do like our strongest material right at the beginning. And then after that, we had a special guest, you know? And so we had special guests that come on. And that was another nice transition where we had 4 or 5 minutes where we had someone that we admired and inspired. And then after that, we had something called Make of the Week. So that segment was about some type of maker project that you can make at home. And sometimes it was a magic trick. Sometimes it was just a craft, you know, of how to like, you know, do something with gardening or do something with just a toilet paper roll, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, it was always interactive. It was always something that was had a reward in a very short amount of time that you can make at home so kids can be inspired. And then I started doing animations. There's this great app called Flip-A-Clip. You can get it on the iPad. And it's basically like a digital flip book. And I started doing cartooning animations, and you can see those transitions. And that really helped it feel like a TV show, like a little, like, you know, like a little like obscure television program. So between those three things.
Is that the thing that you do at the beginning too?
Yeah. The cartooning stuff.
Looks great. I was going to ask you who's doing that. That looks great.
Oh, thanks, man. So I'm taking robots from my actual theater show, and I just drew them into cartoons, and then they like, you know, move around. And so like those help, like the transitions are so important for digital stuff I'm learning, you know, just simple video transitions that are 5 second long or 8 second long before you get to the next segment is stuff that Katie and I have been tackling, you know.
Yeah. So that's the way to go. Instead of doing talking head for 20 minutes or 30 minutes, which is kind of can get boring after a few minutes, you know, you're doing a DIY make your own thing.
Yeah.
And then a transition of this cartoon and then playing guitar and talking to the kids. And
that's what I'm talking about. And so like when I work with Camp, it's a really cool company. So what we do is, dude, I only do 15 minutes of magic. That's it. I just hop on. I do my strongest 12 minutes, and then the last 3 minutes is me doing a dance party with kids. I would never dream that I'd be playing guitar for my magic show. But that's the point, is like, I would have never dreamed all the theaters were closed and I'd be stuck behind a screen. It's like, you got to be flexible with what's happening, and you got to take every talent you've ever made and utilize it during these kind of times. You know, it's so important.
Yeah, who would think? When I first started doing this, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm performing for elementary schools and libraries. Those are my two main markets.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, elementary schools will never close. Libraries will never close. Well, libraries maybe eventually, but yeah, schools, they never close. No way. Here we are.
I mean, it's crazy, dude. It's amazing. But that's like, you know, you're doing the same thing. You're being flexible. You're pushing these podcasts. You're pushing your content out, inspiring other performers. We, you know, like I always say, like you either give up or you get up, you know, and you know, that's what's up.
I interviewed Katie, I guess about a year ago now.
Yeah.
After I saw you guys at CAX, and she gave us all sorts of social media, how to market on social media and stuff. You guys are a power team together. How did you guys get together and how did that all work out? How did you figure that all out?
That's a great question. You know, Katie and I used to work for Philip and Henry. I don't know if you ever heard of them.
It's an online booking agency.
Yeah, yeah. And this is like 13 years ago. I mean, this is a long time ago. They did all the bookings and it was great. They gave me my first gigs where they took a chance on me. I'd never performed live like for a birthday. And so they, you know, they really helped shape that. But anyway, we had to pay our rent, you know? So yeah. Like Katie quit her day job. She was working in the city. I was working with special education. I was a teacher aide. But we reached a breaking point, you know, where Katie was like, you know what? This September, we can do what Philip and Henry are doing. Like we could book our own shows. Like I'm going to call every school like in New York State.
Yeah.
And it was funny because Katie will tell you this. That September email, she emailed multiple schools, but she emailed every email she can get from a particular school. And she got in trouble. There was a school that like got really upset. Like, you can't do that. You can't just email all of us. That doesn't, we're not going to book you, you know? Like, but we learned, you know, we pushed through understanding what works, what's good etiquette with getting shows. That first month was scary. We barely made it, you know? We went through a credit card or two. And what was so cool was that when the engine started rolling and we started getting these shows and I was working on it and it started working, it was powerful, you know, because it was on our own two feet. And there were times that was really scary too, where like we had slow months. We didn't know August and September are the worst months for like magicians and performers. You know, kids are getting ready for school. They're not doing many parties. Schools are not booking in September most of the time, you know. So we learned these hard lessons, but we're like squirrels, right? We gather the nuts in the winter, you know, in the spring and summer and save them for the winter. And what was so cool was that it was more out of desperation of it's only us. No one else is going to tell us what to do. No one else is going to give us money, you know, either sink or float. So Katie just got, she's very artistic. You know, she does all the social media, all the images you see on her Instagram, on her Facebook, that's all Katie. All the web designing, that's all Katie. She's an artist. She's a genius.
She is a genius. She's amazing.
And she's passionate about it. She's gotten job offers from other companies, big companies to do their social media. And she doesn't do them. And like her reason is because she's not passionate about it, you know? And that's another big theme in my magic show. It's like, you got to do what you love. I know it's a cliche, but there's some truth to that, you know? Because when you do what you love, you're eager to learn and then you become better.
Right.
So now, you know, we have a system, you know, like Katie doesn't let me post anything on Instagram, you know, like she's gotta be, and I respect it, you know, cause it's like her thing. And then I work on the making things, you know, and I try to make my show better.
Nice. By the way, that was one of my questions, but it was also one of Annie Banani's questions.
Oh, was it? Nice. Oh, she's great. She's great.
She is great. She has a question coming up. As a matter of fact, you know, let's go on to a fact or something John just made up. Sound like a good time?
Yeah, it sounds great.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give you a headline and you're going to tell me whether it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it.
Okay. Mm. Oh man, I didn't know we're playing games. All right, it's on.
Here we are. It is on. Okay, you ready? Here we go. First headline. Right. Mario was a shepherd once of 45 sheep and a goat.
Was it true or not? It was true. It was absolutely true.
Is that right?
I spent 2 years hitchhiking cross country. I left my parents' house at 17. I got my first tattoo when I was 17. You know, I ended up in Big Mountain in Arizona. They needed sheep herders.
Wait, this is in Arizona?
Yeah, it was in Arizona.
Okay.
It was on a reservation and I heard about it through like the grapevine, just people talking about they needed sheep herders. It was a political thing. But I grew up very faith-based. My mom, you know, going to church and reading the Bible to me as a child, talking about David as a shepherd, you know, all these metaphors of sheep and shepherd. It was something in my mind. Like I just wanted to experience the concept that was brought to me so much growing up. So when I showed up, John, to shepherd, they were laughing at me because they're like, wait, you're not here because of the whole political battle? I'm like, no, I just want to learn how to herd sheep. You know? Like, I heard it. So there is this amazing activist there. His name was Styx, and he taught me how to herd these sheep from morning to night. And I learned all this amazing stuff because in the beginning, when you're herding these sheep, the sheep want to go to the water well right away. But the problem is if they drink water early on, their bellies get full and they're too lazy to go and eat from the, you know, from the grass or whatever. And so like I had to gear these sheep away from the water well, and then finally when it was noon, you know, I could bring them to the water well when it was most hot so they can drink, and then it bring them back, you know, before sunset. But it was crazy. There was a goat, and goats are terrible sometimes. They like want to like be punk rock and go to the water well early. So half of the time I'm chasing this one goat out of 44 sheep. But anyway, it was a real amazing experience. I was there for 3.5 weeks. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about life. I was with a family that didn't speak my language. You know, there was just all these levels of learning, and it was very humbling. So I did that, and I overcame it. I went by myself. It was scary, but at the end, it was really great.
What other podcast are you going to get that information on sheep and goats?
This is it, dude.
Insane. All right, next headline. Mario met his wife while on vacation in America.
It's false.
Okay. How did you meet your wife?
Katie, she moved from the Chicago area to New York, and she actually went to the same school that I went to, but I missed her by a year. I graduated, but the year that after I graduated, she started the same high school I went to. It was a very small high school in Rye, New York. It's only like 56 kids in my graduating class, super tiny. And then I was playing in a punk band. I was playing in a punk band called Boomhauer. She used to come to my shows. We used to play all over the suburbs there. And there was a whole big punk rock scene, hardcore and pop punk. And apparently I drove her home one night. I don't remember this, but like she, you know, she claims that I drove her home with a bunch of friends. I don't remember. But long story short, you know, after, of traveling and all the sheep herding, all the craziness, I ended up back home and she ended up home. She was traveling too. And just by chance with MySpace, she reached out to me, or I reached out to her or something. And
MySpace. That's a good
one. Yeah, MySpace. Man, I'm really dating myself.
You and me both.
But yeah, so that's how we met. It was just great timing because we were both in big relationships that broke apart, and it was just good timing.
Okay, next one. Mario spoke Italian before he spoke English.
Yeah, that's true. Ding, 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 ding.
Is that true?
I need a bell.
Are you originally from Italy, or what's the deal?
No, I mean, the truth is my parents got married in Italy. My dad, you know, he came when he was 20, like 19, 20 years old. He came to America. My mom arrived here at 14, but she didn't graduate high school, you know, because they moved from a different country too. And so long story short, when I was born, we all spoke Italian, you know, like my grandma and grandpa, they're still alive. God bless them. My grandpa just turned 90 years old on September 9th. We had an amazing party. I had a lot of trouble, you know, kindergarten, first grade was tough, you know, with reading and writing and all that. It was just a mix of just learning all that stuff. But yeah, Italian, I mean, I have videos of me when I was 4 years old singing Italian songs and like just talking so rich.
Wow. Do you still speak Italian?
Yeah, but like I get very embarrassed because it's like a dialect that I was taught, you know? So when we go to Italy, because my grandma lives in Italy, all my aunts and uncles and my dad's and my cousins, they're jokesters like me, you know? So I got, you know, every time I talk, they're laughing. So I get self-conscious, but yeah, I could speak. I understand really well.
All right, next one. Mario built a kit car once.
Ding, 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 ding. It's true.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. The Bradley GT. They were a kit car in the late 60s, early 70s, I believe. I just fell in love with the hot rod culture. There's an artist named Ed Roth. And when I first heard about him, he really moved me, because he would make custom cars with plaster, and then he'd fiberglass over the plaster, make his own custom bodies for cars, you know? And, and what he did was so revolutionary. He was an artist. So from that, I wanted to get into hot rodding. And then I Google like prices for like a Ford, a T Ford or something, you know, it's insane, you know? So you can get a Bradley GT for like $1,500. It rests on a Volkswagen Beetle chassis. And they're these kit cars that you can build for on a budget, you know? And I saved up my tips for magic shows. I would put like 10, 15% away and save it up. And I got a Bradley GT, and I didn't build it from scratch, but I rebuilt the whole dashboard. I rebuilt the whole interior. I put all the lights in it. I tuned the engine up. I did replacement parts. I rebuilt the carburetor. You know, I learned all about cars, and it was the greatest feeling in the world when I registered that vehicle and drove it for the first time. It's like driving your artwork. And that's why I love Ed Roth so much, because he got interviewed one time by a major news article where he said they called him the Salvador Dali of car culture, and he got insulted. And he said, what are you talking about? He's like, Salvador Dali? He's like, his art is stuck on a wall. He's like, I drive my art, man. I love that answer.
That's a great answer. Well, you said something in one of the videos that I was watching that you just said just now, when you're talking about the pride that you have when you drove off that, when you registered that Bradley, and you talk about that when you're teaching magic to kids and they're doing a magic trick that they created.
That's why I'm in it. You know, you find the things in your life that bring you big joy, the memories that you have, whatever it is. And then you try to fuse that into your into the moment. You know, when I had that big breakup and I left Michigan and I was done with traveling and I came home, I was 22, 23 years old. Everyone was out of college. They were buying their first house. Like, it was insane. You know, like I had a dream one night, and I've talked about this before. One of those dark nights, I had a dream of me performing in like a church basement or something. And it was all kids. And I'm laughing like crazy. And when I look to the kids, they're all laughing like crazy. And there was this joy inside of me that was like exploding in my dream of light. I woke up and I thought it was the strangest thing in the world. I'm like, I've never done shows for kids. But that's how I started the journey of being a teacher's aide first. You know, it was like, maybe if I become a teacher, that's what that dream meant. And it just organically formed. But yeah, like, you got to follow these gut feelings, because when it first happens in your gut, no one's going to tell you it's right. They're going to tell you it's wrong.
That's right.
No,
yeah.
It's a lonely road. Even when I first got into the birthday parties, I didn't enjoy it, you know, but like I said earlier, you know, the very thing I was running away from was the very reason why I exist. We got to be flexible. That's all.
That was fact. Or something John just made up.
So we're going to go to fan questions. You want some fan questions?
Yes, let's rock it.
All right, first fan question. A lot of magicians this week. Graham Rogers, an excellent magician out of Phoenix, Arizona, asks, do you ever sleep?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I guess when you have two kids and you're homeschooling and you have a house and you have an Airstream to pay for, you know, the pressure is high. And the pressure
is high.
And right now, especially now, like, we're so public facing, like, we're just pushing everything digitally and virtually. So they keep you on your toes, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to ever get a second job. And so, like, if I have to work three times, it's hard to make sure that everything works out, then so be it.
Now, you were homeschooling before homeschooling was mandatory.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's another thing that I'm talking about when I say follow your gut. Because we started 2 years ago, and I can't tell you the amount of people that came up to us like, are you sure you want to homeschool? Do you think it's a smart idea, Mario? All these haters.
Yeah.
It's like, people are so afraid. You understand, like, the school schedule, it limits your freedom. You know, if you want to travel, you have to travel within the boundaries of when school is off and when holidays happen. You understand? So all of a sudden, when we made that risky jump where we're like, you know what? We're going to homeschool. Everything else we've done is renegade style. The way we get theater bookings, the way we get our shows. So Katie was like, let's do it. I'm researching. And we started. It was hard in the beginning. And it was hard because people that you love are saying to you, like, are you sure you want to do this? And questioning it. And now, since the pandemic, all of a sudden, we have emails everywhere. Hey, can you help us with homeschooling?
Sure.
Homeschooling, you know? Like, so I'm just saying, about that gut feeling thing is so key. And I'm talking more to myself than to anyone else. It's something I always forget. Like, you get that feeling in your gut, you got to follow it, because most of the time, no one's going to be there to tell you it's right.
And in fact, they're telling you the opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
I had the same thing when I first started doing magic for kids. Same type of thing. Are you sure you really want to do that? Can you really make a living doing that? Are you sure?
Yeah.
This is what I'm doing. I'm having a great time doing it.
It's a testament. That's your purpose, you know? It's a real testament to that. Like, you stuck to it. You know, you didn't let that voice get to you.
All right, next one. Brett Bolich, another terrific magician out of Southern California, my local area here. Almost the same question. How many glasses of cold brew, iced coffee with no water do you drink in one day?
Oh, yeah. You know, my character is an exaggeration of who I really am. You know, like, the way that you perform, the best way to be like the best that you can be is to be partly who you really are, you know, in person. So like, if you watch us online or if you see my show, it's very high energy.
Yeah.
It's intense. And why is it like that? It's from 12 years of birthday parties, trying to survive in a living room where most of the adults are not paying attention and kids are getting up. You know how it is, John. It's like street performing times 10.
Oh, yeah.
If you're not on your game, you lose. You know? Yeah. So that's where my character kind of comes from. It comes from that street. And also the punk rock. Like, I'm just such a big fan of the mid-90s pop punk scene. Like, that's my blood, you know, that like in your face kind of character. It's an act that I love, you know, and it's part of my real life. I'm just, you know, I'm high energy. You either love me or hate me. I'm never lukewarm. I'm either hot or cold all the time. And that's part of the strength of our business too.
All of a sudden, I don't know if you switch gears, you switch a switch, what happens?
It's a natural thing. You become the wild and crazy man, you know?
Exactly.
you just get the gear, you know, and I have fun. Like, if you see What If Kids Rule the World, if you see our segments, I have my megaphone, I'm screaming, I'm challenging, I'm trying to break the barrier. Like, I'm trying to like connect on the screen. I'm trying to like see how can I get those kids to react just as strong as when they see me live.
Mm-hmm. You
know? If I have to up the notch of the coffee feel, amen, man. I'm in it.
I have my coffee right here. In fact, I mentioned it, right? Brett has another, more of a technical question, I guess. What is a basic software for Mac to program all your robots and things?
Yeah, that's a great question, Brett. Right off the bat, for virtual shows and virtual things like that, we've been using Ecamm. It's only for Mac. Mm-hmm. And it's so smooth and it's so lazy. I love it. Like, it's just click and drag videos, click and drag when you want to play scenes. So for live Facebook live events and stuff like that, try Ecamm. You know, it's a great tech. And as far as robotics and stuff, if you want to get into that stuff, I would say get an Arduino kit. If you Amazon, just an Arduino beginner's kit. Or if you get into, try Microbits. Microbits are very popular. Little Bits. These are for kids. But I tell adults to get them because it gives you a visual idea in a very simple way. Like, Little Bits are magnetic electronic components, and you just pick them and you magnet them together, and then things happen, actions happen.
Mm.
Check those out, Microbits. But if you're really interested in programming, most of my stuff is just an Arduino kit and micro servos. If you Google those, you can get plastic micro servos for like $4 each. Nice. And get an Arduino kit for $25. And then look up tutorials, you know, get a servo to move. That's your goal, how to make a servo move. If you can make a servo move with an Arduino, you can animate anything.
Cool. All right. Well, Jeff Horton out of Connecticut, he's a magician out of Connecticut. He asks, we go back to live performing now. What was your most challenging moment on stage with a volunteer, and how did you overcome it?
Oh, man.
I know. Yeah. Go through your little file cabinet right now of things that happened on stage.
I do a thing called the karate coin. It's a David Roth trick where you throw a coin in the air and you karate chop it and it gets stuck on your index finger.
Okay.
And so what happens is it's a very risky move because you're tossing one coin in the air and you're smacking that airborne coin with your other hand as you catch it in finger palm. And what happened one time was, I'll never forget this. I had a big corporate gig. It was, you know, the Ragu tomato sauce.
Yeah.
It was like their family or some, I don't know what family. It was a big company family party. I tossed a half dollar in the air. I smacked it and I didn't catch it in time. And that half dollar flew into the kids and nailed this kid right in the forehead.
Ugh.
And just gasped because there was a mark on his head. And I'm like, this is it. My career's over. How did I do this? And it was the most embarrassing. Like, it was so hard because, like, he's like holding his head. And like, I quickly changed gears. You know, I had him be the helper as soon as he could, you know, and I tried to get him to be excited and happy. And he had a mark, you know, but I learned a heavy lesson. Like, I never do that karate coin facing the audience ever again. It's always side screen, you know. So I learned my lessons. I don't know. That's the first thing that came to mind. That happened years ago. But things happen, you know. Things break. I was at Kadabra, and I plugged in Marcel the Monkey. He's the finale of my show. And the second I plugged him in, the ground wire snapped. And I saw it. The hot lights are on me. The audience is dark. It's me, and I'm looking at this thing, and there it is. The ground wire is gone. There's no way I can splice that wire right now in the moment while everyone's waiting. And I just picked it up, and I did Whit Hayden's four-ring routine and just went with it, and it was hard, and it was humiliating in my gut, but you just move on. Like, it's just part of life. Who said it? Di Vernon, someone said it. The definition of a great magician is, like, how they get out of the problems that happen in live performance.
Yeah.
When you watch another magician perform and you watch them mess up, you know, your heart sinks for them, you know, and you know the mountain that they have to climb up there. There's a sympathy there. Like, you relate to it because we all have those problems. It doesn't matter what level you're at in magic. Things go wrong.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you this story. When I first started doing magic, I was doing birthday parties and things just like everybody else. And I was doing a backyard show. And the opening of my show used to be, I used to make a couple of doves appear.
Yeah.
The first dove I made appear in a backyard, I'd like, ta-da, dove. And he just flew up.
Oh, no.
And away.
Oh, man.
The opening to my show.
Wow. So what did you do?
Say bye. And then I just went on to my show, you know.
No way. So you left it.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. What can you do? I mean.
It's gone.
Yeah, all the kids are probably, their heads are all turned in the direction of the flight, right? You're just like.
I meant to do that. I go through a dove every show. Yeah, it's an amazing trick.
That's really funny. But I mean, also from these mistakes come great moments too. Great Tom Sony, you know, with the bird poop pooping on his shoulder by accident one time, you know, becomes the key component of his act. So you could take those mistakes. And speaking of which, when we're doing the virtual stuff for Make Magazine, we had special guests come on live. And it sounded theoretically really smart, really great. It's in the moment. But then when internet connection problems happen on the other end that we can't control from our guests, all of a sudden it's an awkward 6 minutes. I'm trying to gather stuff live and I'm sweating on screen. So we realized early on that mistake, pre-record these things and jump into it and make it look real. You know, and that solved, that was a huge solve. You know, you make the mistake and then you fix it.
That's smart. So you throw in the pre-recorded video into your eCam.
That's right. Yeah. Ecamm is brilliant. So the first 5 minutes of the Mario show are not real. I'm not live. I'm live streaming it live. It looks like I'm live because when we go live, finally, it's the same lighting. It's the same backdrop. And I'm wearing the same exact clothes.
Right. Gotcha.
So we mix it up. You know, we mix it up. I only do short, like 1 minute introductions. And now it's time for our special guest. And then we go and it transitions to a pre-recorded thing. Or it's time to do our make of the week. We cut, and then it's me walking down the stairs of my attic to my bus, you know, and it's always the same pre-recorded thing. But these are like standard TV things that people have done for years. I just never knew. I had to learn the hard way. Yeah. You know?
That seems to be the way to go nowadays. And people don't, the people you're selling to don't need to know that. They just think that they're seeing a live record, a live show.
Exactly.
Whereas it's a mix between live and recorded and live and recorded, et cetera, et cetera.
The best way to go. That's what I found. For me, that's the best way. Yeah.
Yeah, it's better than seeing a talking head. Michael Worsham, a magician from Maryland, he asks, is there a very basic effect that one of us rank beginners might attempt to do with the actuators or whatever they are called? Well, you answered that earlier, that you use to create magical gadgets.
All of my material is based on a language that's for elementary age kids. So if you want, right now, go to Tinkercad.com, Tinker with the K, Tinkercad.com. You could start 3D designing right now for free. It's a free tool that's online. Kids from all over the world are learning 3D design on Tinkercad. There's built-in tutorials. So you start with that. You 3D design, you take the tutorials, you learn how to make a digital die, you know, on a 3D design of that. And then you 3D print it, you know? So if you have a library that's local, right now I know because of COVID, everything's closed, but you can go on Amazon and get a 3D printer for $150.
Yeah, they're cheap now.
Just look at the Amazon reviews, you know, just type in Amazon 3D printer and look at the reviews and read them. The ones that are made for that's simple and easy. You start 3D printing what you design on Tinkercad. And then my last thing is get an Arduino kit. They come with servo motors in there. It'll look overwhelming when the box arrives, but it's all stuff that you plug in like a puzzle and you download the software and you start. If you're really interested in it and you really want to take the leap, email me. I'm more than happy to send you an email with a bunch of links. Check out makezine.com. There's always tutorials on there. Check out adafruit.com, adafruit.com. They have tutorials on there of how to build stuff from beginning to end for beginners. Wow. Adafruit is a great tutorial. It's a great website. They have amazing tutorials that are all with pictures and step-by-step instructions. Adafruit.com, great New York City DIY electronics company.
Awesome info. All right, last question from our friend Andy Benani, one of the top balloon artists in the country. How much are the kids getting into performing? I see them every once in a while in his shows.
Yeah. You know, Bear, my son Bear, he's the dancer of the family. Every time there's live music, if there's street performing, he dances all the time. He dances sometime on screen during our dance parties.
Yeah.
Gigi, when we were doing theaters, she was getting into clowning. We saw Slava's Snow Show last year. One of the best Broadway shows I've ever seen. It's just amazing. If you Google Slava, you'll see some of clips on YouTube. But Gigi got inspired with clowning, you know, traditional clowning. So she was getting into that. But right now, Gigi is not performing, but she's super into sewing. And it just happened naturally. She's making felt stuffed animals from scratch. She started from a kit that we got at Barnes & Noble, and then she started making her own animals. And then now she's taking apart old stuffed animals and making new animals from them. She's on Instagram. Maybe I'll put it in the comments when this goes live so you guys can follow both the kids. Ninja Bear is my son. He puts his little robotic projects on there. And then Gigi, I don't know offhand, I think it's Maker Gigi on Instagram. You'll see all of her artwork. And right now, artistically, that's where they're striving and they're having a lot of fun.
Okay, send me those. I'll listen to this back, but send me those to make sure we have them exactly correct. And I'll put them on your show notes too.
Oh, thanks so much, John. Yeah, like they've been learning about posting on social media, you know, and like learning how to put their art out there, you know.
And I know this may sound like a strange question, but how can somebody order one of those stuffed animals?
Oh, that's it. That's a great question. Yeah, she's been taking commissions. Today, my good friend Charlene, he's a great kids performer in New York. His mom, it's her birthday, and after this conversation, we're gonna deliver a handmade owl that Gigi made because she loves owls. And she's turning like 80, I think 88 years old, you know, today. And so we're gonna stop by and drop it off. If you follow her on Instagram, send her a DM, you know, Gigi's up for it. She's been making crazy cool stuff. You'll see, like, you know, so that's a great idea.
That is so awesome. Well, thanks for doing my show. This was really, really fun. I really had a great time.
Oh, this was awesome. John, I love what you do. I love the people that you interview. It's inspiring, especially during these times where we have a lot of time to listen. It's just great to get on our feet and get inspired like this. So thanks
for having me. We do have some time. Now, before I let you go, do you have any social media or anything you want to plug before I let you go?
Yeah, you could check out facebook.com/MarioTheMagician. So if you guys want to see some of the clips we're doing. And MarioTheMagician.com. We're doing a virtual tour. So we're doing a couple theaters in the month of October where we're doing the Mario show virtually. Mm. And it should be really fun. So you'll see some of those live. And then on Instagram, if you guys are big Instagram people, same thing, Mario the Maker Magician on Instagram or Mario the Magician, you'll see us pop up.
And a plug for both you and your wife. If you want to see how Instagram is done right, take a look at Mario's Instagram. Katie's doing a bang up job on that. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's true. Our Instagram page, I think, is our strongest visual page with our content. And yeah, Katie rocks it. She rocks it,
baby. All right. And thanks to all my Variety artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist podcast. And if you have a minute, make sure to rate and review. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of the Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.